Well, hey everyone, it's Monica, your host of the We Are In Build podcast. This week, we are so excited to be interviewing our very own Deja Riley. She is on staff with We Are In Build, serves on our marketing team, and has really helped bring a new level of organization and new creativity to our staff. Deja is a recent graduate from UNT. She is killing it with a big girl job here in Dallas, and she's also one of the most fun-loving and intentional women you will ever meet. A little fun fact about her is that she is the youngest member on our staff, which is surprising to everyone because her maturity is way beyond her years and her wisdom precedes her. And we are super excited to share a bit more of her beautiful journey and what she's overcome to be the woman that she is today. But before we dive into all of that, I wanted to take a quick moment to tell our listeners hello, to tell them who we are as We Are In Build before we dive in. If it is your first time listening or your 12th time listening, We Are In Build is a ministry whose sole mission is to remove that veil for all women, whether that's fully or just partially. We create a safe place and platform for you to feel seen, known, and understood intentionally and individually for who you are right now, in this moment, in process. We embrace what makes us different and are committed to the beauty and individuality. The main way that we do this is by capturing authentic stories of women from all over the world and sharing them through our variety of outlets. By first sharing the victory of one woman in Jesus' name, we expose the reality that you are not alone and that the victory has been won for you. We share stories through our social media, through our podcast, through our video testimonies, and even through our blog. And so today we are going to be chatting even more about an amazing story we shared on our blog through Deja. But before we dive into all of that, let's hear a quick word about our next event coming up on November 13th. If you tuned into our last podcast, you heard a bit about this, but I just wanted to remind you all that this event is November 13th, a Monday night here in Dallas, Texas, near downtown Dallas area. We will be hosting a night of worship and prayer with intentional conversation, to gather like-minded women who love the Lord, who are seeking Him, and ultimately just to create a safe place for the beauty of diversity and individuality to be celebrated. This event is completely free. We have over 80 women who have already RSVP'd for this event, and we are super, super excited. And of course, we will have some great gifts that we'll be giving away, along with a great word and just really an intentional time of fellowship for you. So if you have not, visit our website. It's www.weareinville.com to check that out. And you can click the link, the announcement link on that page. We'll quickly take you to the link to register, or visit the link in our bio on our Instagram at We Are In Build, and in that you can quickly find the link as well to get all the information and register too. So we hope to see you there, and without further ado, we are going to dive into this episode of the We Are In Build podcast. Well, welcome back, everyone. We are so excited for this episode of our podcast. This week, we have our very own Deja Riley with us today. Say hi, Deja.
Hi, everyone.
Yeah, we're so excited to have Deja. Y'all, Deja is the baby of the team. She does not act like the baby, though, and she does not live like the baby. She is Miss Independent, living on her own in Dallas, working a big girl job, and we have loved having her. We are going to actually unpack her story and her journey, which I'm just so ecstatic for you ladies to hear a bit more about her journey, to hear from Deja herself, to talk about some of the things that she's overcome and just her real journey of growing up with a single parent and so many other things that we're going to dive into as well. But before we get into all of that, Deja, why don't you take a few minutes to just tell our listeners a bit about you and what you do?
Okay. So of course, my name is Deja. I was born in upstate New York, but moved to Dallas when I was two. So it doesn't really count. I'm a Texas girl at heart. So I graduated in May from UNT. I got my bachelor's degree in marketing, and right now I'm working at a local agency in Addison, Texas, as an account executive, which is super fun. Stressful, but it's fun. And I just always I've just been into like just kind of doing my own thing and expressing myself in different creative ways growing up. And some of those outlets for me in the past few years have been through my blog. which has gone through like several changes since I started it. I also started a podcast that I will be getting back to very soon. Nice. And most recently, I started a women's organization with my friend Alexandria called The Glowprint. And really what we do is just host events here in Dallas for different women of color entrepreneurs and influencers in the area, just giving them an opportunity to network, but not over your typical brunch and mimosa type of thing. And also just providing an outlet for them to be able to feel supported and celebrated and celebrate each other and focus on more than just how do you get more likes or how do you get more followers, but kind of like, how are you doing with all this attention that you have? And what are some of those things that you're dealing with in your personal life that you kind of feel like you don't have anyone there for you in that sense, but you have a large platform of people who follow everything else that you do. So totally. That's something that we kind of felt was missing. It's kind of the problem that we're looking to solve with the Glowprint. So that's been very exciting too. So other than that, I just make jokes on the internet and watch Grey's Anatomy.
Girl. Y'all, Deja is so funny. Side note, we were just laughing before we started this podcast because she at work had a Halloween like day. Halloween's like around the corner. And so on her Insta story, y'all, she had the funniest things I've ever seen. I was like, oh my gosh, if you guys have to give her a follow. She's at OMG Deja, D-A-I-S-A-H. I spelled your name right, girl. Look at the Lord. Look at the Lord.
I'm so proud. It's taken a while.
We had the hardest time when she started with We Are Unveiled with her name. I think everybody spelled her name differently.
I've been Daisy for like a good like 5 weeks.
You were Daisy for a hot minute, which is so funny. yeah, she is really killing it, y'all. She's 21 and she is just a go-getter unlike anyone I've ever met. And as we unpack her story today, I think you guys will just be even more blown away by just her drive and her tenacity for life and just the call that God has upon her life. So I'm super excited. So thanks again, Deja, for joining us. And as I said at the beginning, her whole story is actually on our blog at weareinbell.com/blog. We have her full story that she wrote out and that she actually shared with our team when she joined several months back. And I'm just going to read you guys a quick summary and then dive into some questions with Deja to help unpack this. And really excited about how I know she'll be able to encourage a lot of you listeners who may be going through similar things. So Deja, your story is one of you just really stepping into who you are and recognizing that you are set apart as a woman of God and a woman of color. You share a big part of your life and how you grew up with a single mom, which I think so many of our listeners and audience can relate to, and the realities of what that meant for you in growing up fast, and then dive into even more of your story and unpack some of the trauma that you faced at a young age, starting with being molested at 13, entering into abusive relationships, and being raped and a suicide attempt, and eventually you share about this vulnerable time in your life where you fell into a deep depression all before turning 20 years old, and in the midst of everything, you just share how along this whole journey, you grew up in the church, you were raised in the church, and how, you know, your struggle with God and your identity in that flew as well within your story. And then in 2017, it was really your turning point year, and you just shared a lot about how this was your lowest point, how you felt like you really couldn't shake whatever this thing was that was holding you captive and holding you down and feeling defeated. But through your process and pain, you share about how you really felt how God was too far off to help you, but you found yourself alone one day and struggling with the idea of suicide. And you call your mom, you have this 2-hour conversation with her, and through those sobs and thoughts and just expressing how you feel to her, you share how you heard God say to you, "Baby girl, I just need you to trust me. I can work with where you are." And you share that it was that day that you decided to live your life intentionally and pursue God as fiercely as he pursues you. And that brings us to today, to, you know, this journey that you're still on. I know it's a daily struggle and a daily thing, but for you joining our team and being a part of our group and adding so much value there, and then even seeing you walk through some things with us has been so, so encouraging. So, Deja, you begin your story by sharing how people have assumed that your life is hashtag goals at times. So unpack that a bit more for us. And what did you mean by that when you said that?
Yeah. So, for me, that really started in college. I was super involved on campus and like every org known to man, and made a lot of really awesome friends from different walks of life. And I think kind of being proud of my achievements and kind of knowing what I've been through in life and look at what I'm doing now, I got excited to share that with my family, got excited to share that with my friends. And where do we do that? On social media. But as we all know, the thing about social media is you only see, for the most part, you only see the good things that people go through. It's definitely a highlight reel of accomplishments, achievements, the high moments in people's lives and when they're feeling really great about themselves, but you don't kind of see the backstory, what it took for them to get there. Maybe that was like the one good moment they've had out of the entire month. Then that's what they share. You don't really know what they're going through outside of the picture and the caption. So seeing that I was so involved, or, you know, like my blog is popping, or I started a podcast, or I'm going to this event or that event and making connections with whoever, people are like, oh, you're literally just goals. Oh, I want to be just like you. Like, can you show me how you do this? Can you show me how you do that? And of course, like, thanks for looking up to me. Thanks for being inspired by me. But like, I don't really know what I'm dealing with on the inside. I post this, which I think you have to be very careful about, but I would post these things to make me feel better about myself, to make me feel better about the good things that I have going on, because like 10% good things and like 90% crappy things. So I just think that, you know, people saying goals or you're accomplishing so much, you're doing so well for yourself. And I'm really proud of that, but that's only like a small fraction of everything that I'm dealing with and feeling right now.
Totally. So in light of that, share with me just, and our listeners now, I mean, I know you personally, so it's different, but one of the things that I was even thinking about before prepping for this interview was, man, Daisha is such a networking queen, and she is a hustler, and you were just at this amazing event with Devon Franklin, and I was like, how did she get there? You know, just so many of those things. So how do you now balance, you know, now that you're on the other side of your story and you've, you know, kind of overcome some of the things you were facing, how do you balance that aspect of continuing to be this person, you know, who does have influence and who is, you know, sharing things, of course, on your social media, because we all do. How do you balance, you know, the struggle of potentially what people may or may think or feel about you or misinterpret based off of your post? How do you balance that now?
Oh, it's interesting. I think the more people that I meet, how do I want to say this? I meet so many different people through so many different ways, whether it's like a brunch or through a friend, or I go out to eat and I run into them, or I knew them through college. Like, people have met me at different, when I was at different places in my life, or accomplishing a different goal. If I'm at a networking brunch, I'm trying to accomplish something totally different than if I'm at like happy hour with my friends and dinner.
Totally.
So, but I think for me, it's just the reason why I'm so transparent on my social media is because I don't want people to feel that they met a Deja at happy hour that's completely different than the Deja that's at the Potter's House in North Dallas.
That's good.
That's at a networking brunch. I don't want people to feel like they're getting different versions of me. And I feel like the best way to do that is to continue to be transparent about the times I struggle with sin, or whenever I'm still struggling with anxiety and depression, or if I have a really good time, or if I'm hanging out with my friends and I have a drink, because I'm not getting drunk. I just want to have a drink with my friends. You know, I think it's important to show every part of who I am. In the best way possible, so that people feel like, you know, I'm a real person, I'm a real human, and my influence will go further because I'm not presenting something that I'm not, and I'm giving a full picture of who I am to people since they have met me in those different spaces.
That's good. So it's no longer the highlight reel, it's the full picture, like the ups and the downs. I love it. So in your story as well, you know, moving on, you share a bit about growing up fast, a bit about, you know, being raised by a single mother. I know a lot of our audience can relate to that too. So just share with me a little bit about how that was for you growing up that way. You probably knew nothing different, you know, but how do you feel like that has shaped you today into the woman that you are? And looking back, how do you see God's hand really in that when it comes to your purpose today?
Well, it's crazy. I was thinking about that yesterday when I was having a conversation with a new friend. Well, okay, so my mom's from Rochester, New York, definitely from the hood. And she was the first in her family to graduate high school. And the first thing she wanted to do was get the heck out of there. So we had an uncle who lived in L.A., and she moved to California and went to Santa Monica Community College. Mm-hmm. And my dad, who was raised in L.A., was playing football at L.A. Southwest. That's where it is. I don't really know the full story of how they met. I know they met at the pier in Santa Monica, I believe. Started dating, got pregnant with me while they're both in college. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I think my dad was unfaithful, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And I know that whenever he found out that my mom was pregnant with me, he didn't want her to continue with the pregnancy.
Wow. So
I think for me, it's just kind of been like rejection since before I came into the world.
Wow.
And rejection is something that I've always struggled with, especially when it comes to my relationship with my dad. But he ended up getting a football scholarship to go play at UNT. So he left LA, and my mom was just kind of left pregnant and alone in California and had to move back home with my grandparents. And so I think that probably took a toll on her to kind of have, you know, been the one that almost made it.
And then of course.
Either fully supportive of that or kind of hate on it. And then you come back and it's kind of like a, I told you so, or, you know, you're no better than us kind of thing. I can see how that may have been very disappointing for her, but
totally.
My mom had a really rough upbringing. She grew up in poverty, also grew up being molested since earlier than I was, since she was like three. By family members, babysitters, neighbors, you name it. And I think that she just really didn't have positive feelings about where she lived and didn't want to raise me there if she didn't have to. And so we ended up moving to Dallas. And for a while we stayed with my dad's mom, and then whenever she could afford to live on her own, it was just her and I. I actually didn't know this until I was older, but she made at most like $10 an hour until I got to like high school.
That's crazy.
And I never knew it. I never knew it. And I'm so appreciative for my mom because she didn't want me to feel like we didn't have money or that I couldn't fit in, because that's how she felt growing up poor. So she did what she could to make sure that I at least felt included, that I had somewhat nice things so I wouldn't get picked on. So that was really cool, and I'm super appreciative of it. But also, you can't help but have to grow up fast. And I'm very nosy. I think I'm just like very mature. I've always have been. And I'm learning. I'm starting to learn about like what an empath is. And my mom's feelings when I was younger, I remember they affected me so much. Like whatever she felt, I felt like I felt it 10 times worse. So though she may have shielded me from some things when she was hurting or when she was struggling or when she was stressed, I felt that. And I kind of felt the need to be a really good kid, stay out of trouble, get really good grades, and do what I could to not make things harder for my mom. So that just had, you know, caused me to grow up fast as far as like my maturity and emotions. But I think also too, just like, you know, my mom had to work. So I was daycare, and then whenever there was a time in our lives where we couldn't afford daycare but the school bus went to our apartments, I was like 9 years old watching myself a few hours whenever my mom got home, until my mom got home from work. And that turned into, you know, like sneaking and making a MySpace or like watching stuff I probably shouldn't have been watching, like the real world at 9 years old, you know, like being affected by so many different things that you know, maybe if she had the opportunity to be around more, or not that she wasn't, but you know, just maybe not, it's hard to explain. Like if I just had a typical, you know, upbringing with two parents and we were able to afford for someone to be home when I got home, maybe I would have been shielded from some of the things that I had to experience and see.
Totally. Wow. Girl, I feel like I learned so much about you right there in that few minutes. But I love that you were able to recognize, like, even when you were young, you know, just like what your mom needed at the time. And yeah, that may have forced you to grow up a little bit sooner, but it sounds like it really made you be self-aware and be conscious yeah. of, you know, people around you and their feelings and their emotions. And I feel that with you so much, even on our team, and just knowing who you are. And you're a very thoughtful person about other people and their emotions and their feelings. And even how you approach situations is very mature. Y'all, our whole team was shook when Daisha told us her age, because we all thought she was like 26, like, or 27. Like, we were like, no, she is not that young, but she is. So that is amazing. I love it. I'm sure you love your mom, you know, even more for everything she did. And this yeah. is a question that I didn't put in there, but I want our listeners to hear a little bit about. I know that you didn't have the best relationship with your dad growing up and he wasn't always there, but now you do have a healthy relationship with your father, and you guys yeah. recently went to the Kendrick concert, right? Kendrick
yeah.
Lamar, which I'm like, what, dad, where are you? Like, my dad is failing. Hashtag fail. I don't even think my dad knows who Kendrick Lamar is, much less like take me to his concert. But tell our listeners just quickly about that redemptive story with your father and kind of how you've been able to have him a part of your life now, even if, you know, he wasn't always there when you were younger.
Yeah. Wow. That's so crazy. It's crazy how like life is just from bringing all this stuff up this week and I'm being asked about it. And I've actually been thinking about it since tonight this week. That's aww. Cool. But yeah, my dad and I, it's just been like growing up, you know. Mm. So he was on child support and we had like the whole custody thing, so I believe the setup was like every other weekend I was supposed to be with him and like spend time with him, and then if I was with him for Thanksgiving I'd go with my mom for Christmas or vice versa, and it would swap mm-hmm. every year, and that was pretty much the arrangement. But growing up I never really spent a weekend with him. Mm. He'd pick me up. We might go to the mall or Dave and Buster's and or get dinner or something, and then he dropped me off at his mom's house. So however many years I can think of, all those weekends I was supposed to spend with him out of a month, I was spending them with my grandmother
wow.
and my cousin. So it was normal to me
mm-hmm.
because that was always what it was. It was never like – it never changed. That was like really consistent, like – oh, weekends here, I am going to my granny's house. Like,
yeah.
I might see my dad. I know he'll pick me up and drop me off. That's about it. And I think as I got older and became more aware of things, mm-hmm. I started to grow cold and bitter because I would notice that his girlfriends, which there are a lot, but his girlfriends who have kids, mm-hmm. he would do stuff for them that he wouldn't do for me. To go on like quote unquote family dates to like the fair or to Six Flags, and I wouldn't always get to go. Or even my little feelings were crushed when I found out that one girlfriend in particular, he like threw her son a huge birthday party in his grandmother's backyard with like a blow up little jungle gym and like wow. everything that a kid could want for their birthday. And I was mm-hmm. like, I never got I think he's come to like my birthday dinners that I might have had growing up, but he's wow. never celebrated my birthday for me. So I just remember growing up, he always put work before me. Mm. And it always felt like he was putting his dating relationships before me, but he would compensate by buying me things. So that kind mm-hmm. of became our relationship is, yeah. you know, we don't have strong emotional tie or connection to each other, but I know that if I ask for something, I'm 100% going to get it yeah. plus more, because that was kind of the way he showed his love for me, is by providing things for me.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and I think it's interesting just knowing kind of, as I got older, I got to kind of figure out what happened mm-hmm. between him and his dad's upbringing. Mm-hmm. And not to put, like, all his business out there, and to also make a long story short, but his dad was in the NBA, and wow. they lived a very nice life in mm-hmm. California, and then him and my grandmother ended up divorcing, and he moved, and so my grandma had to, like, move back to the hood with her sisters, and
wow.
I believe if what I was told is true, he was estranged from his dad growing up, mm-hmm. and so I think that really took a toll on him, and mm-hmm. maybe he didn't know how to, he was very emotionally distant from me. And I think looking back on my life and how God has like brought me through and just being able to connect the dots,
totally.
I now be not bitter, but empathetic at the fact that like he didn't have his dad around.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't know how to be a dad 100%. He's kind of teaching himself how to do it.
Totally.
Or still maturing in that aspect because he didn't have an emotional connection with his dad. So how's he supposed to have one with his daughter that's healthy?
Yeah.
So I think being older and the wisdom that God has given me over the years, I'm able to see that and I'm mm-hmm. able to understand a little bit more. But we've had like times where we've like put our hands on each other. I had to call my cops on my dad. I remember in high school, I like wrote a poem literally for class. Didn't know my teacher was entering it into this like contest, and I ended up getting picked. And the whole poem was about how much like my dad hurt me and
wow.
like he didn't care for me. And he found out I was in the competition, and I invited him the whole time. I'm like scared to tell him that the poem is basically like about awful he is.
Wow.
And so I was like, okay, I gotta tell him. And so it's like maybe 15 minutes before I have to go on stage, and I gave him a copy and he read it and his eyes rolled up and he just left.
Wow.
Like 5 minutes before I have to go on stage. So I have like really deep hurtful like memories.
Yeah.
Which I thought I'd be able to get over. There have been times where we've gone like 2 years without even speaking to each other.
Wow.
And me being cut off from his side of the family almost. And it's been really hurtful, but I don't know, like my 20th birthday, we weren't speaking. I was only speaking to his mom and his sister, and I invited them to my birthday brunch.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent me a really long happy birthday message when, like, the year before he forgot my birthday.
Wow.
And so I was really skeptical about it. And
wow.
everything wishy-washy with us, and I was mm-hmm. just kind of like, thanks, Dad. Have a great day. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
But he was really consistent, like starting with my 20th birthday and every day after, like I would hear from him, even if I didn't text back, even if I didn't call back, he was like pursuing me and pursuing a relationship with me. And I mean, the way we grew up and how our relationship had always been with each other, I didn't trust it. And
yeah.
I got so used to protecting myself and my feelings and having my guard up that I kind of knew how to operate with him, but the fact that he was so persistent this time made me really uncomfortable. And then I finally broke down and was like, okay, let me not hold this against him.
Wow.
Yeah, and we just worked on our relationship day by day, week by week. And, you know, sometimes it has its up moments and sometimes it has its down moments, but
yeah.
I have to learn that the same way that I, like, constantly will like sin or like turn back to the same sin that I know I struggle with, or just do like straight up wrong, just like do wrong against God and like what I know I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah,
he always brings me back and he always takes me back and he doesn't hold it over my head. So in me growing in my relationship with Christ and trying to have that mindset, I was like, God isn't like this with me. If I'm supposed to have the heart of Jesus, I can't be like this with my dad.
Totally.
No matter how justified I feel I am in feeling this way, or how credited I feel like my feelings are. And I kind of got rid of that anxiety of this is going to like blow up in my face one day.
Wow.
And when I got rid of, you know, holding those things over him, everything was so easy. He's literally like, he's like a friend. We love the same music. We love the same shows. We love the same food. We love to talk about the same things.
Yeah.
I think I'm very business savvy oriented, and I know for a fact I get that from him.
Aww.
I get my hustle from my dad. I get like my interest in pop culture and like fashion and music from him. So it's just been really cool to like rebuild that relationship without the anxiety of like, this is only going to be us for a month, or it'll only be like this for like a few more weeks, and then everything's going to like go back to being terrible. That's been really exciting. We're like super close now. I talk to him all the time. And I think another important thing that's helped me is that I've gotten rid of the expectation of what I think our relationship should be.
Yeah.
Because we're building literally from nothing.
Yeah.
So the same way I'm learning how to be like a good daughter to him, he's learning how to be a good father to me. We're just kind of in this process together, trying to find our happy place. So
yeah.
I just, I'm so thankful for just looking back on all like the terrible times we've had and terrible we've had towards each other. Know that I can go to like a Kendrick Lamar concert with him and he knows like more words than me. Or my 21st birthday, he really wanted to like, I really think he was just trying to redeem himself and make me feel loved and celebrated. And so he's like, what do you want to do? I was like, well, I want to go on a girls trip. I was like, all right, cool. Where do you want to go? And I was like, I don't know. Where should I go? And he was like, how about you do Vegas? Like, ask your friends. So, like, I'll pay for as much as I can. I'll just buy your flights and we'll go and have a good time. And that's what we did.
Oh, my gosh. So fun.
The best time ever. And so just reflecting on all these memories we made over the past 2 years versus the past,
so special. 2 years. Yeah. I think so that's amazing that you have had the maturity and the grace to not hold a grudge against your father, you know, for not being perfect, and that you're able to just have that empathy to see that, you know, he isn't perfect, that he's been through some things as well, and that he's trying, and that, you know, his effort and his trying is something that you're going to be receptive towards versus shutting down because, you know, he failed beforehand. So I think that's unique, first and foremost, and secondly, just so beautiful because you normally don't see relationships like that restored until the child's much older, like has a family of their own, or, you know, for example, like my dad, his dad didn't tell him he loved him until my dad was like 40 something, you know, and was not around. And so I'm like, he's grown, like he has his own family, like you haven't seen him or talked to him in years and you're barely doing that. But I think it's beautiful that, you know, whatever it was that happened with your dad, for him to make that effort. So it's still early on in your life and in his life where you guys can, you know, have more of your life that you celebrate together in a healthy way versus the latter, you know, of more of it kind of with these bitter memories. So that's amazing, Daisha. I love that. So as we chat further along in your story and just more about some of the things you've been through, you share a bit about, you know, you've been through a lot, obviously, and as readers read through, they'll be able to see, you know, fully what you've been through, but you share a bit about how you grew up in church and that, you know, God was a part of your life, and looking back at everything that happened to you, you know, with, you know, being molested or and raped, even these abusive relationships, did you ever blame God or really question why he allowed so many bad things to happen to you?
It's crazy. I don't know that I ever blamed him. It was more so just why? Like, I've always been super curious. I'm a very nosy person. and I'm a planner. So I like everything, how everything works in my head is like A affects B, or B happened because of A, or B is going to affect C. That's just kind of how my mind works and operates since I was younger. So I don't know, all the stuff happening to me while I may not, like in the relationships, I didn't know that they were abusive in the moment. You know, it was kind of like it was normal to me. Or, you know, I was molested when I was 13, but it wasn't until I was in therapy after I got raped when I was 19 that I was able to say like, oh, I was molested, that's what that was. So I think in those moments I didn't know that that's what it was, or that was going to be something that affected my life so much, or that would kind of be a part of my story, my testimony. But yeah, so I don't know that I ever blamed him. I was always just curious, like, well, what's the point of this? Like, how's this supposed to affect me? Even just here and where I am in life today, looking back, it's always just, what's the reason in this? Why did this happen? And whenever I think about those relationships or those instances where I was violated, I remember literally the Sunday after I was raped in college, I was at my family's church, and the sermon, he kind of made this analogy about how he made this like illustration of how like God sits at this huge desk and he's like just the boss of everything. He's a ruler and he calls all the shots, and everything that happens in your life, imagine that whole instance and that whole circumstance is just typed out on a piece of paper and it comes across his desk, and every day he's just reading these papers and he's approving it or he's blocking it. And so everything that's happened in your life, no matter how bad it was or traumatic or how much it sucked, he allowed it. And And my favorite thing that I always tell myself and I tell others is that God is not withholding anything good from you. And so while I don't think that it's God's will for people to just, like, you know, be out here and, like, rape people or molest people or be abusive, I don't think that's his heart at all. But I believe that he allows us to go through these things with all the sin that's in the world, so that way we can come out on the other side and be able to bring glory to his name.
Amen, girl.
That happened. Mm-hmm. So that image of him just, you know, abusive relationship, number one, approved. Like, molested at 13, approved. Your dad wasn't around, approved. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, you have this stack of papers on the other end of the desk for all this, like, crappy stuff that's happening in your life.
Yeah.
And, like, you just have to trust and know that, like, at the end of the day, he allowed all of that to happen because he has, like, a plan. Like, he wants to use it. He's going to give you, like, strategy and resources and just wisdom to be able to use that in a way that is bigger than all of those situations. So that's just kind of been the thing that's, like, pulled me through.
I love it. I love it. I love it. As you're talking, it made me think about this past week we had revival at church. Girl, we old school. So
I love revivals growing up.
I know. I did too, girl. And they don't do it anymore. But you know how Covenant Church is, girl. We doing a revival up in here. So we were at revival and this guy was preaching and he was talking a bit about this, you know, how we go through hard things and we know that God is the kind of God who in a moment with the flick of a finger, like he can fix it or he can like save you from these things. And he said, you know, he was older and he said, you know, looking back, I remember telling God, like, why did this happen? Or, you know, why me? And why didn't you fix this? Or why weren't you there in this? And he said, now the very things that I wanted God to fix quickly have been the things that I've been able to walk with people through and see God do miracles through me. Like,
that's so good.
And he said, so I could have said, like, God, you did one miracle in me, or now I can see, like, 400 miracles as a result of what I've been through for other people. And I just think that with you, Daisha, 100% that, you know, you recognize what you've gone through is not in vain and that the Lord is going to use it. And you already are using your influence for so much positivity and so much good. And I know that God's going to do that in you, that, you know, the things that you've been through won't be in vain and you'll be able to say, you know, I'm going to be able to see the miraculous through me because of what I've been through and God do more and heal more and impact more through your story and through what you've gone through. So I'm excited. I'm on the edge of my seat, girl. I'm ready.
Yes.
I'm ready. So we are getting close to running out of time. So I'm going to ask you one last question, then we'll dive in some of our fun questions at the end. But your story is all about being set apart. So just share with us, how can you see now, looking back, that you truly have been set apart by God for such a time as this?
So the one thing that always gives me chills, no matter what sermon I'm listening to, or who's preaching or who's speaking, it's when people say, or, you know, speak over your life that you're going to be the one to break generational curses.
Yeah.
That always gives me
chills. And I have chills right now.
Yeah. Same, girl. I always get chills and just emotional whenever I hear about that because my family, like, I'm just so observant and I'm just, I don't know. It's, my family has just all gone through so much collectively.
Yeah.
Individually, their stories, both sides of my family, like the story of my dad, his relationship with his dad and his, even his relationship with his mom and how that affects the way that he is with women that he dates, that affects the way that he is with me, his sister. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, her being a woman, how that's affected her. My mom, her growing up, being the one to almost make it, you know? Yeah. So it's like, I'm the one that has to make it all the way. And then I have a little sister who literally copies every single thing I do. Aww. And a brother who copies everything that we do. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like I'm called to be that one to, like, you know, finish what other people have attempted and finish what they started, or
even start the new things. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Really cool this week to see after, you know, my blog was posted on the site and a lot of family members who live back home in New York have been reading it. And like a lot of my little cousins, they deal with the same thing, like poverty, not feeling love, promiscuity, maybe have been violated or in abusive relationships. And like I said, they see me and they see me in Texas and they see all the cool things I do. Mm-hmm. So them reading my stories, like, what the heck? She's like gone through the same things as us. And, you know, Wow. I think they have this image of me forever since I'm not there, mm-hmm. that I'm so well off and live this perfect life. And I'm like my homegirl. Like,
yeah,
I'd be in Dallas, you might live whatever in a nice neighborhood or whatever you want to call it, but it hasn't always been this way. Mm-hmm. And what you see is not always what's happening on the other end.
Yeah.
So I just really, I always think like, how have I been through so much and like, I'm still here, you know,
yeah.
like God is still covering me through everything and protecting me from a lot of stuff, even stuff that I've like knowingly and willingly been like,
oh,
love you God, but I got this grace though. So
yeah.
I'm gonna abuse it real quick and I'll be back. Multiple times, countless times, like every day type of thing. So, but he's still covered me. He still kept me in.
Yeah.
And I think that goes back to that image of him approving things and continuing to cover me, because at the end of the day, everything that I've been through and my experiences and my story, he's using it and he's given me visions and spoken to me lately about how that will be used. It's just kind of now I'm at this point of like, okay, well, like, show me how to get there.
Because totally.
I have no idea how I'm going to get to like the promises that you're showing me. Literally no clue. So I'm not even going to try. Like, whenever you're ready to show the dog, like, here. So I really think that he set me apart to be the one to break generational curses in my family and to show people that, you know, there's no cookie cutter way to being a Christian.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
And you can still serve God and you can still love people and you can still have that unique personality and flair to you that he's given you, because that's what I use to feel like they can relate to you and draw them closer to him. So just being comfortable in who you are and your identity and your, how unique you are and your story and literally everything that has made your life experience, and know that like there's only one you and that is your power and that is how he's going to use you to like build his kingdom.
I love it. Yes, girl. Amen. 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 You better preach. I agree with all of that. I love it. Well, we're going to just wrap up with some fun questions. Thank you again, Daisha, for just being so bold and so vulnerable and sharing so much of your story, because I know it is so personal and involves a lot of deep things. But I love that you said, you know you're going to break those curses. You're going to be that person to set some new trends, to just be steadfast. And there's such a stubbornness and a tenacity about you that I know you're going to do it, because you're like, I've made up my mind. This is how it's going to go down. I'm going to end up, things are going to end up this way. And I'm just so proud of you for that in so many ways.
Thanks, girlfriend.
Yeah. But let's ask some fun questions. These are quick. Yay. So just quick reply, coffee or tea?
Definitely coffee.
And what's your go-to drink, girl?
My go-to drink, if I'm at Starbucks, it's a white chocolate mocha.
Okay. Okay.
And if I'm at the house,
it's a Keurig.
I don't even have that. I have like an old school coffee pot and I don't really want to change it.
I get
like regular Folgers and I like,
oh my gosh, Folgers.
Yes, Folgers, because I'm an old lady.
Dang.
And I like do way more creamer than I need.
Ditto. Hallelujah. Way more creamer and sugar. It's bad.
Coffee all day. That's me.
I'm drinking coffee right now, so I'm with you. What's one book that you would recommend to our listeners?
Think. Okay, so The Purpose Driven Life is like my all-time favorite book.
Yes,
queen. I read it like literally every year. If you look at the copy I have, you know those little like sticky notes that you can do and they stick out to the side?
Yeah.
Literally every page. There's like five.
I believe you. Because you were the most organized. You were the most organized. Oh my gosh. What is your guilty pleasure?
Grey's Anatomy.
Yes,
French fries and ranch together, preferably.
I love it. And who should we be following on social media besides the Glowprint, of course?
Yes, follow the Glowprint. So everyone should follow Miley Teal. Her name is Myleek, so it's Myleek. She's a creator of a subscription box called Curl Box for African American women.
Oh, yes.
But she's like the queen of everything. Like, she's so dope. She has a podcast called My Taught You. And she literally just drops gems. I'm just like, how are you so wise? Like, how do you know all this stuff? So she speaks a lot about her experiences, like growing up, not having everything and literally just doing the work, no shortcuts, No.
I love it.
You know, like trying to just get in with the right people, literally do the work and be consistent, and mm-hmm. you will see the success and the progress that you want to see. And she has like amazing style, and she literally would just gather your edges and get your life together.
Girl, so everyone's following podcast right now. Following right now. I love it.
Instagram stories. You'll really enjoy her Instagram stories.
Yes, you know I love that. So good. So these are Weir and Veld related, but who is your Weir and Veld staff girl crush?
Oh my gosh. Jillian. Yes. I love her.
She is like 3 for 3. Everybody, really? This is, she's I have to bae. Tell her. She is bae. She is.
First of all, Olympics. Second of all, I love her tattoos. And she's dressed so cute. And she's so photogenic. And I'm just like,
how she can do no wrong. She can
literally
do no wrong.
Any hairstyle. I'm just like,
yes. I'm like, how? How? which member of our staff do you look up to?
Duh, you.
Oh my gosh, don't stop.
No, for real. You're like one of my role models.
You're so sweet. I love you. I didn't pay her to say that, y'all. I swear. Which member? Okay, this is funny. Which member of our staff is always camera ready?
Honestly, do I have to pick one person? Because it's literally everybody. Definitely you.
I am. I'm guilty as charged.
All the time. Like, I'm just like, how? And
I'm ready.
Definitely Sydney.
Yes.
Cynthia and I really don't even feel like she's trying.
No. But when she does try, she's into it, girl. She's like, when she knows the camera's on her, she poses for it. But you're camera ready too, okay?
And
like,
I,
totally you, okay?
And I really think Kayla's just like such a natural model. Like, she's
that's
so
true.
Beautiful.
Oh, girl.
She's camera ready for sure.
Yes.
But that's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Last one. Which member of our staff surprised you?
Oh my gosh. So I definitely think Jessica Pittman.
Ooh, girl, that's a good one.
So I was like first interviewing you and Hannah, which is like, oh, you're going to love Jessica. Y'all are literally the same.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. And then, so I come to the first meeting. And, like, I think just our humor and our personalities were, like, so much alike that, like, she's kind of irritating me because I was just like, ugh, like, we're the same. Like, make it stop. But
oh, my gosh.
Also, which I spoke on a little bit at a retreat with you guys, is I am always around, like, super diverse groups of people. Mm-hmm. But I think having a group of diverse friends, but everything be kind of focused on like our spirituality and like our walk with Christ. That's new to me. Cause that space in my life has always just been like very black.
Yeah.
So having to be vulnerable with y'all in that space, was something that was uncomfortable for me, to be honest. And so we were sharing our stories that night and Jessica shared hers and it's like, wow, she's like polar opposite.
Yeah.
Like, we have the same humor, and I think, like, that same, like, kind of loud and, like, bold personality. But other than that, like, we could not be, like, any different.
Wow.
Hearing her story and some of the things that she struggled with in life and all that, I'm like, wow, like, literally the same. So that really surprised me and made me, like, appreciate her humor.
Yeah,
and, like,
totally.
So she surprised me the most, for sure.
I love it. Well, this has been so fun, Daisha, so insightful. I know our listeners are going to love tuning in. And if you guys have any questions or want to connect personally with Daisha, you can email her. It's Daisha at weareinville.com, D-A-I-S-A-H. If you visit
finally
our website,
got it right.
Finally got it right, girl. Jesus, he has saved me and redeemed me, girl. But if you guys also can't find it for some reason, just go to our website, click on Meet the Team and find her beautiful photo there, and you'll be able to connect with her instantly via that link as well. So Daisha, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for sharing your story, and we will be chatting again with you guys soon, but until then, we hope you'll have a good week. Thanks, Daisha.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the We Are In Build podcast. To stay connected to all things We Are In Build, visit our website, www.weareinbuild.com, follow us on social media at We Are In Build, or shoot us an email with your questions, comments, or to further discuss anything that we chatted about in this episode at hello@weareinbuild.com. We're so thankful for you. We hope you have a fabulous weekend. And of course, thanks again to David Sposato for mixing our jams. Until next time, talk soon.